This is the Does God Exist Quarterly Journal for the second quarter of 2026 for the visually impaired. And our cover this time shows a man and a woman in a boat on a lake. And our theme is Finding God Through His Creation. John Clayton is your reader. People find God in many ways. For some, their relationship with God is through their family. If you were raised by parents who had a great relationship with each other and with God, you are blessed in a very special way. That is the way God wants families to be. The Bible tells of people who had great faith because of their parents' faith. The book of James was written by James, the son of Joseph and Mary, and therefore the physical brother of Jesus. In writing to Timothy, Paul said, quote, "I am reminded of your sincere faith, which first lived in your grandmother Lois, and in your mother Eunice, and I am persuaded now it lives in you also." 2 Timothy 1 and verse 5. Many of us were not blessed with having been raised by godly parents who lived their faith and raised us with the kind of love God wants us to have. Another way that some find God is through suffering and tragedies in life. When I was in the military, there was a saying in our infantry that, quote, "There are no atheists in foxholes," end of quote. Serious illness, a horrible accident, or a debilitating disease can bring a person to God. My personal faith to God did not involve any of these, and most people today have not come to faith in God through any of these paths. Like many people, I was raised by parents who did not believe in God and did not see anything that would encourage me to have faith. My parents did more than not provide a basis for faith. They were active in denigrating people who believe in God. My parents were not evil people, and they were very successful in the academic world. On Sunday, our family would go to the swimming pool at Brown County State Park in southern Indiana because there were fewer people there than on other days. They told me that Christians were hypocrites and the cause of racism, immorality, ignorance, and intolerance. That is the picture the media presents of Christians today, which is why when people are asked about their religious affiliation, over 40% of people in America say none. So how does a person like me come to believe in God? The answer does not come from organized religion. Every denomination that I had contact with as an unbelieving young person had no answer for my lack of faith. Churches were social clubs and provided no basis for belief in God. As a college student at Indiana University, I saw kids from conservative Christian churches go morally wild when their parents left them at the university. My parents allowed me to join a fraternity, and I lived in a dormitory for 2 years, where I saw firsthand the results of a lack of moral guidance. The campus life I saw and the distance that grew between my parents and me, combined with my military experience, led me into a different world. Military field camps in Grayling, Michigan, Camp McCoy, Wisconsin, put me in a natural world far different from the college life I had known. Spending several summers in a family camp on Lake Michigamme in Michigan's Upper Peninsula, I saw nature at its best. I spent many hours in a boat seeing a creation that was far too complex and far too beautiful to be explained as the product of accidental evolution. I also saw the result of faith in God in the lives of people who were serious about knowing why they existed. The recent writings of atheists about why there is something instead of nothing are an admission that atheism can give no reason for existence. I was blessed to have companions who had a reason for living and believed that life in this world is only part of human existence. These intelligent, well-educated people had something I wanted. They had a relationship with God, who created the natural world I had come to know well. I had found God through His creation. I found Him first through the natural world He had created, and then through people who had found His plan for successful living. My relationship with Jesus Christ has given me the power to overcome personal challenges and pain. It has also guided me to a ministry that has allowed me to associate with people who have blessed my life. The pattern design in the natural world. Science News highlighted an intriguing report on the pattern design found in nature. biologist John Nyakatura and colleagues at Humboldt University of Berlin examined tile-like patterns in various plants and animals. They aimed to discover ways to incorporate these biological tiles into bio-inspired devices. They documented 100 examples in the journal PNAS Nexus. The skin of an elephant has a tile-like pattern with cracks and wrinkles that trap water and mud. This arrangement helps dissipate heat to cool the elephant. Butterfly wings use overlapping tiles arranged to display colors while repelling water and reducing drag during flight. The eye of a fly features a tile pattern made of closely packed rods, each transmitting an image to the brain, making it extremely difficult to swat a fly. Instead of bones, cartilage skeletons of sharks and rays consist of thousands of individual tiles that grow as the animals mature. Research shows that other living organisms also benefit from tile pattern design. The sunflower's head consists of tile-like patterns of teeny flowers called florets. By packing the florets in a tile-like structure, the sunflower becomes more attractive to pollinators. Armadillos are protected by overlapping tiles that provide stiffness while allowing them to roll into a ball. The earliest forms of life also used tiles, indicating that tiles did not evolve recently by chance. The fossilized shells of ancient cephalopods known as ammonites show squiggles along the edges of their shell tiles. Understanding the usefulness of tile designs opens the door to significant new benefits for humanity. The more we study living things, the more we recognize God's wisdom in planning. The statement in Romans 1:20 that we can know there is a God through the things he has made is supported by every scientific discovery. Searching for human ancestors. The history of attempts to develop an evolutionary explanation for modern humans is filled with errors and assumptions. Some foot bones found in 2009 in the Afar region of Ethiopia, along with other bones discovered since then, have led to the naming of a new species, Australopithecus deyarmidae. The Afar region is also where the fossil known as Lucy was discovered, and these fossils have been celebrated as the ancestors of modern humans. First problem with this type of report is that the word species is used very loosely. When I took biology classes, species was defined as a form of life that can breed and produce fertile offspring. A dog and a cat are different species because they cannot breed to produce fertile offspring. Most of us remember that a horse and a donkey can breed and produce a mule, but the mule is sterile because horses and donkeys are different species. Today we have two ape forms considered different species. The evidence includes a few foot bones, fragments of pelvis, skull, jaw, and teeth, not a complete skeleton. Because these bones are found in close proximity, researchers assumed they must belong to the same species, not to Lucy's species. Australopithecus afarensis, since these supposedly show progression along the ancestors of modern humans, how much variation do we see in humans and apes today? The name Australopithecus literally means the ape from the south. These are not humans, but apes. None of this has any connection to the biblical account of God's creation of humans. The statement in Genesis 1:26, "Let us make man in our image," does not refer to God's physical image. God is a spirit, John 4:24. Genesis 2:7 describes man's physical creation from the dust of the earth. The Bible does not tell us what man looked like or how he was made or how long it took. Biblical critics and believers alike should not be concerned about the atheist discovery that anthropologists claim is the ancestor of modern humans. Like all human endeavors, anthropology is fraught with errors and assumptions. Humans are unique as the only beings created in God's image, a fact that anthropology does not address. Water is weird. My astronomy students were always amazed to learn that water exists in 22 different forms throughout the solar system. A simple example is why a lake freezes ice on top and liquid water underneath. When most substances cool, they become denser. But at 4 degrees Celsius, water starts to violate that rule and becomes less dense. Because water is unlike any other substance, its behavior allows the lake to freeze on the surface while life continues under the ice. Every elementary student knows that water can exist as a vapor, liquid, or solid. Water boils at 100 degrees Celsius. When air pressure is 100 kilopascals, a pascal is 1 newton per square meter, and there are roughly 4.45 newtons in a pound. At the same air pressure, water freezes at 0 degrees Celsius. If you drop the air pressure to 100 pascals, ice turns into water vapor, skipping the liquid phase altogether. A point of interest to astronomers is that if the pressure is extreme, over 100 gigapascals, water will exist as ice regardless of the temperature. As space probes visit other planets and their moons, they measure temperatures. Not only do the temperatures tell us about these bodies, but the shapes of ice crystals on them can also reveal the conditions there. Natural water ice on Earth are hexagonal, but scientists in the lab have forced ice crystals to take 6 different shapes. Depending on the temperature and pressure, they can be cubic, tetrahedral, orthorhombic, rhombohedral, and monoclinic. It has been said that the more we know about the creation, the closer we get to the Creator. The presence of water on other planets and their moons throughout the solar system enables the clockwork precision that allows Earth to endure for centuries with great stability. We learn about all this through the facts of science discovered by human minds. Genesis 1:1 not only tells us that there was a beginning to time, space, and matter energy, but we now know that the heavens includes God's miracle glue that holds it all together, water. Why do we need the multiverse hypothesis by Roland Ernst? In science fiction stories, characters step through a portal and emerge in a parallel or inverted world. In the minds of some physicists, multiple universes exist. According to the multiverse hypothesis, an almost infinite number of universes exist, each with radically different physical laws and properties. There is no evidence for this, and it is impossible to prove or falsify. So why the multiverse hypothesis? Agnostic scientists who theorize a multiverse do so because they cannot explain the apparent fine-tuning of the universe. Why are the particle masses and force strengths in our universe perfectly fine-tuned for us to be here? Slight changes in any of these factors would make it impossible for life to exist and would likely prevent a universe with stars and planets from forming. Speculation about bubble universes in a frothing multiverse is pure science fiction at present. And so what about another option? Some have proposed an idea based on quantum mechanics, but it's difficult to see how this could explain alternate universes since quantum theory deals with the very small, not entire universes. So what is the reason for proposing multiple universes or quantum mechanics to explain how our universe could be fine-tuned? There is a better explanation for the astonishingly fine-tuned parameters of our cosmos. However, it is one that many stubbornly refuse to accept or even consider. What about the possibility that the universe was designed by an infinite intelligence that exists outside of time and space? Isn't that a more reasonable explanation for the precise design that makes our existence possible? Quantum fluctuations can't explain it. Even an infinite number of universes could not explain how we happen to be lucky enough to live in the one universe that the right combination of all the exact factors needed for life. Luck and chance are not scientific explanations. Even if there were an almost infinite number of universes, there would still need to be an explanation of how they originated. The design we observe in the cosmos can best be explained by a designer. Skeptics choose the multiverse hypothesis to avoid the most obvious and logical explanation. Information is fundamental, by Robert Ernst. At the core of everything is information. DNA carries information in every cell of the human body, as well as in the cells of animals and plants. Without the information in our genes, we could not exist. DNA is a physical molecule, yet it contains information that is not physical. We write words with physical ink on physical paper, but the information in those words is not physical. It is far more valuable than the paper itself, because information is fundamental. Ancient Greek Stoic philosophers used the word logos, translated as word in English, to refer to the rational principle behind the universe. The Apostle John gave that term a deeper meaning when he used it to refer to the One, capital O, who created all things. John's gospel begins, quote, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God," end of quote. He goes on to say that the Word created all things. When you read the Genesis creation account, you find, quote, "And God said, let there be light," verse 3. The phrase, "And God said," recurs in verses 6, 9, 11, 14, 20, 24, 26, and 29. Hebrews 11:3 tells us, "By faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen are not made of things which are visible." Words are not visible. Information isn't visible. We can put information on paper by writing these visible words, but the information behind these words is not visible. Yet it is more important than the paper on which it is written. Information is fundamental, immaterial, and invisible. God is spirit, John 4:24, meaning he is not material. The cosmic creation event, popularly known as the Big Bang, involved the creation of matter, energy, space, and time. That means that the creator of matter, energy, space, and time must be immaterial and outside of space and time. Matter, energy cannot create itself. God's word created everything we see as God spoke the universe into existence. The Bible doesn't specify when God created the universe, what physical processes he used, or how long it took. Since God is not limited by our time dimension, time means nothing to him, 2 Peter 3 and verse 8. After the physical creation, God used information to create life, with a DNA code far more complex than any human-made computer code. There could be no life without information to guide the production of proteins necessary for forming living cells and to direct the metabolism that sustains life. Information comes only from intelligence. The bottom line is that information is built into every living cell. If someone says, "I will not believe unless I can see it," they are not being honest, because everyone believes in things they cannot see. The Word created all things, John 1:3. At the right time, the Word became visible, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth, John 1:14. Those who refuse to believe in God because they cannot see him should remember that the things that are seen are temporary, but the things that are not seen are eternal. See 2 Corinthians 4, verses 13 through 18. What troubled Darwin? In 1831, Charles Darwin, a recent Cambridge University graduate, helped experienced geologist Adam Sedgwick excavate rock layers in northern Wales. They discovered fossils in shale dating to the Cambrian period of Earth's history. At age 22, Darwin didn't realize how significant their findings were. It wasn't until many years later, when he published his book titled On the Origin of Species, that he was troubled by the explosion of Cambrian fossils. What exactly troubled Darwin about these fossils? Scientists call the sudden appearance of Cambrian fossils the Cambrian explosion. These fossils come from a time when the Earth's first major animal groups appeared abruptly, with no clear predecessors. This challenges the idea of gradual evolution. That's what troubled Darwin. The Cambrian explosion was a rapid appearance of most of the animal groups that have ever lived on Earth. Darwin finished his famous book on the origin of species in 1859, 28 years after helping find the first Cambrian fossils. He believed life's history would look like a branching tree, starting with single-cell organisms and each branch gradually becoming more complex. He thought life evolved in small steps over long periods through natural selection. What troubled Darwin was the appearance of Cambrian fossils without ancestors, but he expected future fossil discoveries to show gradual evolutionary changes. However, things didn't go as Darwin expected. In 1886, during the construction of the Cambrian Pacific Railroad across Canada, new Cambrian fossils were found in the Rocky Mountains. In 1909, Charles Walcott discovered fossils of soft-bodied Cambrian animals without predecessors in the Burgess Shale of British Columbia. These new animal forms were more complex than the ones Darwin knew, yet they appeared suddenly, without showing gradual evolution. In 2014, another site in British Columbia called Marble Canyon revealed more troublesome fossils. In 1988, paleontologists discovered exceptionally well-preserved specimens in Changjiang, China. Now, in another site in Huangyang, China, has revealed even more soft-bodied fossils with remarkable soft tissue preservation. Researchers have collected over 50,000 fossils and identified 153 animal species, 59% of which were previously unknown. These fossils span 16 animal phyla. Some evolutionists suggest the missing links are hard to find because soft-bodied tissues don't fossilize well. But these new discoveries at Huangyang preserve delicate soft tissues in detail, from worms to jellyfish showing gills, guts, and even nerves. They were preserved because they were buried quickly in a muddy slurry that turned into shale. The key point is that many animals from the Cambrian period appear suddenly on opposite sides of the planet with no signs of gradual change. They show no clear evolution over time. Darwinism cannot fully explain this puzzle, but those who believe in an intelligent divine creator see these discoveries as making perfect sense. What troubled Darwin in 1859 would trouble him even more today. Microevolution does not confirm macroevolution by Robert Ernst. Evolution, simply stated, is change over time. When we apply this to living organisms, we see two levels, microevolution and macroevolution. The difference between these can be simply stated. Microevolution involves changes below the species level, while macroevolution involves changes above the species level. For instance, transforming a sea creature into a land animal would be an example of macroevolution. Conversely, a bacterium developing resistance to antibiotics illustrates microevolution. The organism remains a bacterium. Microevolution does not confirm macroevolution. We observe microevolution. Besides bacteria, we see human-directed evolution in dogs, cows, and roses. In each case, they are still dogs, cows, and roses, but with different traits. When Darwin published on Origin of Species in 1859, he speculated that if his theory was correct, the number of intermediate varieties of living things should show up an enormous number of fossils. He acknowledged that in his time, geology certainly does not reveal any such graduated organic chain, and this, perhaps, is the most obvious and greatest objection which can be urged against my theory. However, he predicted that over time, those missing link fossils would be discovered. Paleontologists, scientists who study fossils, were some of Darwin's strongest critics at the time. Today, the missing links are still missing. The Field Museum of Natural History has one of the largest fossil collections in the world. In 1979, paleontologist David Raup stated, quote, "We now have 250,000 fossil species, but the situation has not changed much since Darwin's time." Famous paleontologist Niles Eldredge of the American Museum of Natural History wrote in 1985, "We paleontologists have said that in the history of life supports the Darwinian theory of a gradual change, knowing all the while it does not." Now, more than 165 years after Darwin, the missing links are still missing. What the average person believes, the fossil record proves Darwin's evolution because it is what we have been told. Microevolution does not confirm macroevolution, nor does the fossil record. My Chinny Chin Chin by Robert Ernst. Little pig, let me come in. Not by the hair on my chinny chin chin. That familiar line comes from The Three Little Pigs, published in the Nursery Rhymes of England in 1886. It captures the pig's response to a wolf's request to enter the pig's home for nefarious purposes. The pig's clever retort could be stated less poetically as, "Absolutely not." To analyze this quote scientifically, we might ask whether pigs actually have chins. According to the scientific definition of chins, the answer is absolutely not. A recent scientific study stated that no other mammals, not even chimpanzees, have chins. Only humans possess chins. The respected science journal PLOS, one published study exploring why humans have chins. The researchers aimed to determine whether our chins resulted from a natural selection or merely a byproduct of other factors. The issue is that my chinny chin chin serves no clear survival purpose, and thus cannot be directly explained by the evolutionary process of natural selection or survival of the fittest. Because the human chin is unique, anthropologists use it as a distinguishing factor for identifying our species, Homo sapiens, in the fossil record. Evolutionists have proposed several explanations for why we humans have chins. One suggestion is that they help facilitate chewing, but many animals without chins can chew foods that humans cannot. Another idea is that the chin provides more space for our thick tongues, which are critical for speech. Even sexual selection of mates has been proposed as an evolutionary explanation for chins. However, according to the article in PLOS One, quote, "None of these hypotheses have received strong support," end of quote, for obvious reasons. The study's author, a professor of anthropology at the University of Buffalo, suggests that the uniqueness of the human chin, quote, "does not mean it was shaped by natural selection to enhance an animal's survivability," end of quote. As for this animal, or human, I believe my chinny chin chin is a part of God's unique design for his creatures, created in his spiritual image. Scientist and God. Atheists attempt to suggest that scientists are intelligent people who have rejected faith and do not believe in God. The fact is that some of the most productive scientists who have ever lived are believers in God, and we share some of the thoughts with you in this column. And our scientist for this quarter is Robert Boyle. He was an Irish chemist, pioneer of modern scientific method, and best known for Boyle's Law, describing the relationship between gas, pressure, and volume. Robert Boyle, who was born in 1627, said, quote, "The wise author of nature has so excellently contrived the universe that the more clearly and particularly we discern how congruous the means are to the ends to be obtained by them, the more plainly we discern the admirable wisdom of the omniscient author of things, of whom is truly said by the prophet Isaiah that he is wonderful in counsel and excellent in working." Cynthia's Corner by Cynthia Clayton. Finding God through his creation. Romans 1, 19 through 20 says, quote, "What may be known about God is plain to us, because God has made it plain to us. For since the creation of the world, God's invisible qualities, his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly seen, being understood from what has been made, so that men are without excuse." End of quote. God has always given us evidence of his existence. He never requires or expects blind faith. The more scientists learn about the origins of the universe and how life arose on this planet, the more we see that all creation was made by intelligent design, by wisdom and craftsmanship of God, part of his divine nature. Proverbs 8, verses 22 through 30, is wisdom speaking, telling us how God crafted and designed everything from the beginning. God created time, space, matter, energy in Genesis 1:1. He, quote, "set the heavens in place, established the clouds above, gave sea its boundary," etc. Please read these verses. And also Proverbs 3, verses 19 through 20. Indeed, we can see God's eternal power and his wisdom in all he has made and designed. The Holy Bible, God's inspired word, gives many examples of God's wisdom and knowledge, things unknown to humans at the time they were written. For example, science has recently proven that there was a singular beginning to everything, that the heavens had been, quote, "stretched out," Job 26:7, that the earth was designed exactly as it needed to be for animals and humans to live here. My husband's ministry, Does God Exist, gives specific examples of that in the first two videos on doesgodexist.tv. He also has several dandy designs, books, that detail God's many extraordinary designs, all of which have a purpose. We can see the awesome beauty and diversity of the natural world in the endless colors, sizes, shapes, and designs. This is why God says he can be seen and known in the things he has made. God also says that we are without excuse if we ignore what is plainly before us. Dandy designs. Insects use static electricity. One interesting fact about the insect world is that there is no common thread connecting how each insect gets its food. You might think that if all bugs had a common origin, they would show strong similarities, with some bugs being superior because they are more highly evolved. Diversity maintains balance in the insect world, preventing any one insect from dominating. Recent studies have shown that insects use static electricity in various ways. Some parasitic nematodes, teeny worms about the size of a pinpoint, use static electricity to jump 25 times their body length to land on a flying insect. We've all seen insects being blown by the wind, but what most of us haven't noticed is the role of static electricity. A little physics helps explain why static electricity can influence nematode aerial movements. Coulomb's law includes a constant that describes the strength of static electricity. The gravitational constant is 6.67 times 10 to the minus 11th, while the Coulomb constant is 9 times 10 to the 9th, making the static electricity force 1,020 times greater than gravity. When a flying insect flaps its wings, it generates a positive charge. The nematodes can use this charge to leap through the air and attach to the insect where they lay their eggs. The faster the insect beats its wings, the stronger the positive charge and the easier it is for the nematodes to attach. Static electricity helps many insects in various ways. Bees can sense electrical fields around flowers and use them to guide for their foraging. Spider webs deform toward positively charged flying insects, trapping them. Ticks are attracted by the static electricity in the fur coats of animals. Researcher Sam Lincoln expects to find that the electrostatic effects play countless roles throughout the natural world. The complexity of Earth's biosystem is immense and hard to explain as a product of blind chance. God's creative genius is evident in the very large, but it is especially clear when we study the very small. Manufacturing spider silk. While working to create strong materials, human engineers haven't come close to matching what spiders can produce. Spider silk is 5 times as strong as steel by weight. Besides its strength, spider silk is elastic, and because it is organic, it can be disposed of easily without harming the environment. Years of research have brought scientists closer to their goal of manufacturing spider silk. The secret to spider silk's strength lies in the special proteins called spindrins and how they are spun into fibers. National Geographic magazine explored potential uses of spindrins, including medical applications. Since spider silk is organic, it can be used as wound dressings, and nanocapsules could carry immune-stimulating molecules into the body and release them gradually. Gels based on spindrins can coat catheters and surgical meshes to reduce infections and blood clots. Because of its strength, spider silk can be used to produce bulletproof vests and durable fabrics. The challenge is producing spider silk on a commercial scale. Because spiders are kept together, tend to be cannibalistic. The solution is to genetically modify silkworms to produce spider silk. China has large mulberry plantations where silkworms feed on mulberry leaves and spin cocoons. Using this gene editing tool, silkworm eggs can be altered to produce much stronger spider silk. Research by a Michigan-based company is nearing the point of manufacturing spider silk, or super silk. Producing spider silk biologically requires a complex molecular structure and a spider's intricate spinning process. This exemplifies how the natural world reflects wisdom and intelligence, not an accidental creation. Technicians at Craig Biocraft Laboratories in Lansing, Michigan, have spent 20 years trying to engineer silkworms to spin spider silk. Human engineers aim to develop new products by copying some of what God has created. The story of the Tower of Babel in Genesis 11, verses 1 through 14, shows that human pride has a long history, yet many still fail to see the evidence for God in his creation, Romans 1:20. Throughout the natural world, God's intelligence is displayed openly, and spider silk is just one example. News and notes. Space travel brain shifting. New research indicates that space travel and weightlessness can also affect your physical brain. You could call it space travel brain shifting. Brain MRI scans of 26 astronauts and 24 non-astronauts, conducted by Rachel Scheider and others at Massachusetts Institute of Technology, revealed how microgravity affects the human brain anatomy. Their research showed that the astronauts' brain shifted backward and upward while also rotating upward. The effects could be detected months after returning to Earth. They analyzed MRIs from 15 astronauts before and after space flight, and from 11 others after returning. 24 other volunteers participated in a long-duration head-down tilt-bed experiment. There was a measurable change in how the astronauts' brains fit in their skulls, depending upon how long they spent in space. The maximum display was 2.52 millimeters. The bed rest control group did not show marked changes. The question is how space travel brain shifting affects performance after returning to Earth. The astronauts did experience balance issues, apparently due to the effects on the inner ear and the sensory regions of the brain. The bottom line is that the study showed that physical shifts in the astronauts' brains last up to 6 months. Again, we are reminded of how much we depend for survival on the components that God has provided on this planet. New plant communication method. This isn't a new method plants use to communicate with each other, because they have been using it for who knows how long. But for scientists, it's a newly discovered plant communication method. The natural world is filled with astonishing forms of communication, and plants are no exception. Plant communication does not involve images, spoken words, or written text, but can be considered communication. The newly discovered plant communication method involves electrical signals passed from one plant to plant when leaves touch. Ron Mittler and colleagues at the University of Missouri and Columbia experimented by growing theocress. They grew some plants in isolation and some in dense patches where their leaves touched. When they stressed the plants by exposing them to excess light, the plants grouped together showed less stress damage than those in isolation. The researchers analyzed gene expression in isolated plants and in those that were touching. They also monitored signals passing between group plants. According to the report, the plants with leaves touching activated over 2,000 stress response genes that could help protect them from excess light, cold, salinity, and wounding. The isolated plants showed greater cell damage under stressful conditions. Understanding plant communications opens new doors for agriculture, conservation, and our appreciation of design in the natural world. Mittler hopes his research may be used to design mixed plant communities that are more resilient, perhaps reducing the need for chemical pesticides or fertilizers. We believe that God has given us the tools and the talent to reveal new strategies for ecosystem and management and food production. What modern churchgoers believe. Modern America is searching for answers in all the wrong places, and this is evident both in churches and in the secular world. The Family Research Council and the Cultural Research Center surveyed 1,000 churchgoers, adults who attend Christian church services at least once a month. The survey found that modern churchgoers' ignorance is significant. Only 54% of churchgoers said they believe that the Bible is true, inspired, and error-free, the Word of God. Only 61% can say they believe the God described in the Bible. Only 51% said the Bible speaks clearly on abortion. And only 47% said it is clear on homosexuality. When asked whether they prefer capitalism or socialism, 32% of churchgoers favor socialism. Although 30% of those surveyed claim to have a biblical worldview, the survey shows that only 11% actually do. The director, George Barna, remarked, quote, "This generation of churchgoers is increasingly unsure of what they believe or why," end of quote. Challenge for churchgoers and church leaders is how to modify their education programs to confront this ignorance. Currently, the tendency is either to deny the problem or to offer a simplified, outdated explanation that doesn't meet the needs of today's young people. Gambling addiction is increasing. 80 million adults worldwide have a gambling disorder, and online gamblers are estimated to lose $205 billion by 2030. A large percentage of adults with gambling problems had difficult childhoods and started gambling as teenagers. Also, 17.9% of adolescents engaged in some form of gambling each year. Robert Custer was a psychiatrist who, in the 1970s and 80s, advocated treating gambling disorder as an addiction. He started the first inpatient treatment program in 1972 and worked with thousands of people facing gambling issues. In 1985, he co-authored a book with Harry Milt titled When Luck Runs Out. He found that few people with gambling problems sought help until they experienced depression and suicidal thoughts. Custer died at age 63, but his efforts helped recognize gambling as an addiction. During Custer's era, gambling casinos were mainly limited to Las Vegas and Atlantic City. Now there are physical casinos across the country and casino apps on phones. Sports betting has been legalized in many states. Video slot machines and mobile gambling options enable people to lose money anytime, anywhere. Gambling addiction is increasing, and it will likely worsen until people understand that, like alcohol and drugs, gambling is dangerous and destructive to families, as well as to physical and mental health. As with alcohol and drug addictions, the key is to avoid it altogether. Bird's Eye Design. A group of biologists have finally solved one of the great mysteries of biology. For decades, scientists have wondered how birds can have keen eyesight without blood vessels to supply oxygen to the retina. Blood vessels provide vital oxygen to the retinas of other animals, but birds' eyes have a different design. Without blood vessels that scatter the light reaching the retina, the bird's eye design enables sharper vision. How can retinal cells function without dying from a lack of oxygen? A comb-like network of blood vessels called pectin oculi protrudes from where the optic nerve enters the eye and moves freely within the vitreous humor, the fluid filling the eyeball. It transports glucose into the vitreous humor while removing carbon dioxide and lactic acid that could harm the retina. This discovery explains why birds like bar-headed geese can fly at elevations over 6,000 meters where oxygen is scarce. The DNA of these birds is coded to overcome specific environmental challenges while maintaining sharp vision. Encoding requires an intelligent programmer who understands what birds need to survive. Assisted suicide organ harvesting. Today, in the Netherlands and Belgium, medically assisted euthanasia is legal. Anyone opting for assisted suicide may be contacted by an organ procurement organization. The same is happening in Canada, and some groups want to bring it to the United States. When medically assisted suicide becomes legal, it seems inevitable that it will lead to organ harvesting of assisted suicide victims. Assisted suicide advocates suggest that if someone wants to die, their organs can be used to help others. Since they're going to die anyway, why not use their parts? What would stop someone from exploiting the mentally ill or disturbed, especially if there are benefits involved? What prevents abuse of the poor or vulnerable? Quote, we will pay for medical technicians to end your life if you agree to sign your organs over to us. You won't need them, and you won't have any final expenses. So far, the trend of linking assisted suicide to organ harvesting has not gained acceptance in the United States, but it's not certain that it won't. The thought is that people who are seeking medical assistance in dying are not terminally ill, might have better organs. Instead of letting people commit suicide on their own, do it in a hospital where the organs can be harvested immediately. Christians believe that every life is sacred, and we do everything possible to save lives. When society begins to treat some human lives as worthless and human bodies as commodities to be traded, where will it end? Using mosquitoes for 3D printing. 3D printing has become an invaluable tool in many fields, including industrial manufacturing, medical device development, and even hobbyist projects. These applications often demand nanometer scale precision, which requires very small nozzles. Printing nozzles can be made from metal, plastic, glass, or even mosquito proboscises. Wait a minute, did I read that right? Can a 3D printing nozzle actually be made from a tube a mosquito uses to pierce your skin and suck your blood? Yes, there is a way of using mosquitoes for 3D printing. Scientists are experimenting with using a female mosquito's proboscis as a 3D printing nozzle. As you may know, female mosquitoes are the ones that feed on blood, and this approach offers a more useful way to utilize their blood-sucking appendage. It could be highly useful in advanced manufacturing, microengineering, and medical applications. Many times, people have discovered more efficient processes or created new products from observing plants or animals. We call it biomimicry. We also use natural materials from plants and animals such as skin to make leather or wood for building. Why not try mosquitoes for 3D printing? Traditional bioprinting tips are made from non-biodegradable materials that can cost over $80 each. Lab-raised, infected-free mosquitoes cost about 2 cents each, and their proboscises are biodegradable after use. The precision tip of a mosquito proboscis can enable high-resolution drug delivery at a significantly lower cost than other options. God has blessed us with abundant resources to advance manufacturing and medicine while safeguarding the environment. He also gave us curiosity, the drive to explore and learn new things, like using mosquitoes for 3D printing. Marriage and contentment. The Bible institution of marriage dates back to God's statement in Genesis 2:18. It is not good for a man to be alone. A study conducted by Dr. Brad Wilcox, professor of sociology and director of the National Marriage Project at the University of Virginia, has confirmed that statement. There is a strong link between marriage and contentment. The number of people living alone is increasing quickly, and the study finds that this is a major reason for the decline in national happiness. One possible cause for this trend is that some people see marriage as linked to religious belief, yet over 40% of Americans claim no religious affiliation. Additionally, there has been a rise in the number of divorced individuals. The survey indicates that happiness is closely tied to marriage and family. Married men between 18 and 55 report being about twice as happy as their unmarried counterparts, whereas unmarried fathers are the least happy. Married women with children report the highest levels of happiness, while single mothers are the least happy. The research shows a 30% gap in happiness levels between married and unmarried Americans. According to the study, marital status has a greater impact on happiness than income, education, race, or location. Marriage was defined as a legal contract between a man and a woman, and the study noted that those who cohabited before marriage had a significantly higher divorce rate. In Matthew 19:4-6, Jesus said that God created humans, male and female, and that marriage involves two becoming one flesh. Studies by Wilcox and others have confirmed the validity of God's plan and demonstrate the connection between marriage and contentment. And that's the end of the second quarter of the Does God Exist quarterly. We're hoping that we'll be able to get the third quarter out a little more quickly, but we've had a lot of illness among our staff, or the people that put this out, and that's made us a little behind. So be patient with us, please. This is John Clayton. Thank you for your listening. I hope you have a nice summer and that you have a profitable couple of months until the next time we talk to you. God bless you.